Welcome back, everyone. It's that time of week again. It is Podchat Live, episode 123, 123. I'm here with Craig, as always. We're recording this on the 23rd of April, 2024. Craig, how are you?
Yeah, no, really good. The running's going well. I'm sort of on track to hopefully not get an injury.
That's all we can ever ask for. All right, let me put in a caveat for this episode and set expectation for the listeners. I landed back from San Francisco just earlier today. I'm not doing well with jet lag. I think I've currently been awake about 31 hours, just trying to push through till this evening. So yeah, I think Craig will have to carry this episode. I've not really researched the things I'm going to mention. I haven't really read as much as I usually do. I'm absolutely going to mail this one in, and I apologize in advance. But it was that or not record an episode. So here we are. One thing as well, Craig, that several people messaged me when they saw I was in San Francisco on my personal Instagram. Several people said, "Where's the Podsnap Live?" Or from holiday, because I was in multiple places where a Podsnap Live would have been incredible, such as Golden Gate Bridge, on Alcatraz, etc. I did all that stuff, and I just totally didn't do it. Not that I listened to our podcast, but it would have been, I think, nice photos to try and. Kind of illicit kind of people's thoughts, but it shows, I guess, how easy it is to be in a beautiful place or a cool place and forget to do these Podsnap lives. So I had a few people that said, well, I should have done one, but I did not, sadly.
You just get carried away with enjoying the moment. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Too busy enjoying the moment rather than curating how much you're enjoying the moment, which is no bad thing. We did get a message last week, which I just wanted to mention and give a shout out to Nikki Grant, of Grant Podiatry, which is in Scotland. And she posted on her Instagram a screenshot of the podcast as she was listening to it. With a lovely comment which made me smile, which said, "Sometimes I listen to Podchat Live on my way to work, and sometimes it's the Eras Tour. That may not mean
Oh.
anything to people who aren't Swifties, Taylor Swift fans. As everyone knows, I'm partial to Taylor Swift
Oh.
myself. So I thought that was great. We don't normally discourage people. Well, also, we don't normally encourage people to listen to anything other than Podchat Live on the way to work, but I think we can make an exception for Tay Tay. So love your work, Nikki. Thanks for the mention.
Yeah, we're moving up in the rankings.
Exactly. To be even mentioned in the same sentence as Taylor Swift is no bad thing. In the news this week, a couple of things that Craig has seen, which I'm going to flag, and then he can talk a bit more about as if he thinks he needs to. 4 days ago, on the 19th of April, there was an article published, of which the title was "Shoe Technology Reduces the Risk of Diabetic Foot Ulcers," and thereafter, a few days later, in none other than The Daily Mail, that bastion of journalistic research and integrity, they were making mention to socks, which reduce the risk of diabetic foot ulcers. Craig, is there anything, any more depth you need to give us to these
Well, I actually want to do a little bit of rant about this. I thought the press release was really good, and I subscribe to a number of press release services, so that's how these things show up on my radar. I'll put a link to the actual press release, not what the Daily Mail wrote. I thought the Daily Mail actually didn't do too bad. In the press release, there is a link to the article, so you people can follow up the actual research it's talking about. The research is not too bad. The research is about an air cell insole where you can deflate certain parts of the insole, in those with high pressure areas with diabetic foot issues. So that's a good thing. And again, we all know we shouldn't trust press releases. Always go to the source, and press releases are trying to overhype things. And where this press release got me is the title was fine, but then the subtitle says foot ulcers lead to more than 160,000 lower extremity amputations every year. And that reminded me of a number of years ago, who someone who did develop a cushioned sock for diabetes, people with diabetes, to reduce plantar pressures, and was getting pretty upset because the government wouldn't buy everyone with diabetes a pair of his socks to stop all those amputations. And you just got to stop and think for a moment that these kind of socks, these kinds of insoles, are really good, potentially really good at preventing plantar neuropathic ulcers. but not the 160,000 amputations a year. The 160,000 amputations a year are ischemic issues, not plantar pressure issues. And I just, you get these products developed that may be very good for people with neuropathy and plantar pressure issues and plantar lesions. And then they always bring in the amputation risk and forget to mention that, well, there has to be an ischemic element usually before an amputation happens. So that was my issue. No issue with the study, no issue with the press release, just a big issue with the subtitle of the press release to try and grab attention.
Yeah, we know that, that's not an uncommon thing, is it? Another thing, last another thing to mention that was seen, we saw in the news or the mainstream or online media, and this was yesterday. And there's a bit of I've got a bit of I guess a dog in this fight, to, so to speak, because this was a an article written by Professor Gabriel Moisan, who's at in Quebec, University in Quebec, and he published a lovely piece on the conversation, which again we'll link to. And this is a piece referring to the editorial that he wrote, and he was kind enough to invite me to be a part of it as well, that we published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, just flagging to everyone that we shouldn't be too worried about flat feet, that they are or should be considered normal anatomical variants. It's a lovely piece. Gabriel is fantastic at this. He's been really good at disseminating this bit of work across lots of different vehicles and lots of different platforms. So it's great to be on on a website such as The Conversation, I think, Craig.
Oh, I know. I mean, you look at the title, "What if flat feet were normal?" with a question mark. And I just, but it also, the Conversation is a very credible website or publication, or whatever to call it. So it's well worth having a read. But this article, obviously the editorial it's talking about, and other research, it's all happening in the context of more and more questions being asked about normal posture elsewhere in the body, not just the foot. That people who allegedly have postural problems causing all these issues are more and more, or it's being argued more and more, that these are nothing more than normal variants. They're not pathological. So there is this trend, movement, whatever, to these anatomical variations just being normal variants and not being pathological, and looking at the foot in that way is no different. So keep up, watch this space.
Not necessarily anything new there for many people, I'm sure, but the more we can keep talking about it in as many places as possible, it's got to be a good thing. Right, last thing, just before we mention a couple of the articles that we've seen published in the last week, we know Craig often loves to throw us a shoe fact, and I believe that he's had one flagged to him by a listener, Jason Lim, and that's who I think is. I think I've met Jason in Perth many years ago at a conference. I think that's it can only be one Jason Lim. But yeah, what's Jason got for us, Craig?
No, he sent me this reel, which I'll link to, and it's all about what do your running shoes say about you. Now, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go through them all, but if you wear Nike, you're just not very serious. If you wear Asics, you only wear those because they're the only shoes that don't make your injury worse. If you wear New Balance, well, you only wear those because your dad wore them, so you do it too. Two types of people wear Hokas: those that want to run long distances, and those who like to wear offensive colours. And lastly, the on-running shoes are worn by people who don't care how stupid they look. So, if you want something funny to have a look at, it's only a short reel. I'll put a link to it.
Yeah, always a fan of these light-hearted bits of Instagram content that poke fun at runners. That's never a bad thing. Being runners ourselves, poking fun at ourselves is to be encouraged. Okay, let's press on with a couple of the articles that we have seen. This first one was published, well, it's ahead of print, but it's on the British Journal of Sports Medicine website. I think it was first made available online in the last several weeks. But unlike many BJSM papers, because not all, a lot of them are behind a paywall, this one is actually open access, which is nice. Group of researchers have collaborated from Germany, from the USA, from Kosovo, and from France. And The title of this is The Efficacy of a New Injury Prevention Program, Funball in Young Male Football, that's soccer players, a cluster randomized controlled trial. So Funball is a sort of a, I guess, a bit of a portmanteau, or maybe that's not the right word, that they've used, where fun is making reference to the fundamental exercises of which there are six, and ball being a reference to football, because they're trying to reduce injury in football. So fun ball. So over the year, or the season of 2021, 2022, they had 55 football teams in Kosovo that were adolescents between 13 and 19 years old. And they'd been randomly assigned to either the intervention group, where twice a week after their normal work warm up, they applied fun ball, which we'll talk about in a second, or they were assigned to the control group, where they just continued doing their normal warm ups. And then they followed them through that 21-22 season. Now, the six fundamental exercises they have, which I'll just list here for brevity, are number one, balance. Number two, core stability. Number three, hamstring eccentrics. Number four, gluteal muscle activation. I'm not sure whatever that means. Number five, plyometrics. And number six, running and sprinting. So obviously you can go into the paper and look a bit more. But ultimately, they noted a significantly lower injury incidence in the intervention group. So 132 injuries over the course of a season rather than 187 in the control group. So this sort of utilization of these six fundamental exercises, or fun ball as they refer to it, seems to be useful at reducing injury in adolescent male footballers. So this, I think, is an interesting study. I know we've got a bit of previous work on things we can do to reduce adolescent football injuries. People may well be aware of the FIFA 11 plus, for example. But this is another thing that may be a useful thing to be aware of, particularly for people that work in football or people that work in adolescent sport, Craig.
Oh yeah, no, like that's a good study. I always like seeing studies like this. We see lots of risk factor studies on injury, but no one really take or not as many studies take it to the next level about, well, what are we going to do about it? And this is one of those studies that do it. I think I'm all for anything that looks at injury in adolescents and teenagers so that they stay in sport. Obviously, I have daughters of the age where I'm seeing a lot of girls drop out of sport. So, no, look, I like the study. I just wish we could see more of them.
Yeah, big bits of work that clearly aren't easy to do, but lovely to see when they are. Next paper I want to make people aware of. This was published 5 days ago, so on the 18th of April. It was published by a group of researchers from Brazil, and it was published in Physical Therapy in Sport. This paper is called Psychological Factors Show Limited Association with the Severity of Achilles Tendinopathy. Now, I already know that Craig would have sent me this one because it is a topic that he and I are very interested in, and we often talk about on the podcast, but offline a lot as well. And that title immediately catches my eye as something that goes against my own beliefs and bias. It's a cross-sectional study where they've taken 111 participants, all of whom have Achilles tendon pain. And they've asked them to fill out a battery of questionnaires and validated tools, such as the pain catastrophizing scale, the chronic pain self-efficacy scale, the Tampa scale for kinesiophobia, the hospital anxiety and depression scale. And then essentially they've tried to see or determine whether there's an association between these psychological factors and pain. What they found, surprisingly, I think for me at least, is that psychological factors minimally impact Achilles pain severity. There's weak association between self-efficacy, and there's no association between anxiety, depression, catastrophization, and kinesiophobia and pain. And that's led them to conclude that the clinical relevance of psychological factors in Achilles pain is inconsequential. So this one really goes against my current position on just what, particularly when they so clearly state that anxiety, depression, catastrophization, kinesiophobia have no association with pain. That really flies in the face of my understanding, my beliefs, and also what a lot of other papers have shown, Craig.
Oh, of course, yeah. I I quickly saw psychological Achilles in the title and thought, oh, wow, here we go again. But yeah, limited association, because we've always based on the assumption that there is quite an association there. We've got previous studies showing that. Looking through the methods of their study, I mean, okay, it is cross-sectional, but you can't, there's no issues with their analysis and the data they collected. So again, I just it's another matter of watching this space as to where this, say, field of research goes. I'm not, while I'm probably superficially familiar with the body of literature around this, I'm not on top of it in depth enough to see, well, why did this study find this and other studies not find that? I can't see any obvious reason as to why they would find anything different. So it'd be interesting to see perhaps a more in-depth analysis of the differences. But yeah, no, look, just a little surprise there. It wasn't expecting that.
No, agree. And I think it's good always to read papers that you immediately your immediate gut feeling is, oh, that's the opposite of what I would think. I mean, I'm sure the totality of the literature much more strongly points to those sort of psychological variables having being correlates of pain, but that doesn't mean we ignore papers with titles that go against our our position. So always worth flagging this. And last paper, which we'll quickly mention, as my iPad battery is low and my body battery is low, and we're coming up for, I guess, 17 minutes on the podcast, so we'll squeeze one more in. And this was from a group of researchers in China, and it was published yesterday, so the 22nd of April, 2024. It was published in BMC Musculoskeletal Disorders, and it is called Eligibility for Knee Arthroplasty is Associated with Increased Risk of Acquired Hallux Valgus, a Mendelian Randomized Study. Now, I hope I've said that right, Mendelian, because it wasn't a word I was familiar with. I had to go to Google and ask it what a Mendelian randomized study was, and I'll quickly read verbatim what Google told me when I asked it to explain it to me like I was an idiot. And it says Mendelian randomization studies examine how certain behaviors, environments, or other factors lead to specific health outcomes by looking at genetic differences that affect the way people's bodies react to the behavior, environment, or other factor. So maybe Craig in a second can explain that better than I can. But as I've already said, I haven't fully read this paper. I'm horribly jet lagged, so I'm just going to go straight in and tell you what they found. And ultimately, the results from this study indicated that compared to healthy individuals, patients who meet the criteria for knee osteoarthritis joint replacement surgery seem to have a significantly higher risk of having acquired hallux valgus. I'm not going to continue talking, Craig. I'm just going to let you jump in and I've
No,
got
look, it's a shame they actually put the Mendelian randomization study in the title. They could have just left that bit out.
Right.
It is a very complicated, very sophisticated technique. They're probably just better off leaving out of the title, talk about it in the methods, and leave it there rather than try and make it worse than what it sounds. But again, I have no issues with the study. There's an interesting little conclusion there, which I don't disagree with, but it's just saying clinicians need to pay attention to, these are obviously orthopedic surgeons doing knee replacements, need to pay close attention to the patient's hallux valgus status. The whole issue of knee arthroplasty or knee replacement and the foot is a really intriguing one, because they're off the top of my head, perhaps 20, 25 studies have looked at what happens to the foot after the knee replacement. There is lots of studies looked at loading patterns change. There are a couple of studies that have showed foot posture index changes to the foot. And obviously, if you think about it, if someone has severe knee OA, they're not very active. They have the knee replacement, they suddenly become active. And just in a quick look this morning, I managed to find six studies that showed an increased incidence in foot stress fractures following a knee arthroplasty, just because people become more active. So again, as podiatrists, we need to be aware that there is an increased incidence of foot pain following knee arthroplasty. I found one study that showed that 6 months following a knee arthroplasty, 42% of people have foot pain. And I found another study that foot pain actually prior to surgery actually makes the outcome for the knee surgery not as good. So there's a huge body of literature looking at the foot and the knee arthroplasty, and this is just one of those, and that it certainly adds a valuable contribution to that body of literature.
It didn't seem to me in my very brief scan that it was making any suggestions about causation that, one causes, one causes the other or vice versa. It was more just that people that seem to meet the criteria for having knee surgery are more likely to have a bunion as well. But
But that's
did
probably
it,
the altered foot loading causing the issue from the
yeah.
because of the knee. Yeah,
Did it
it's
make any reference in the discussion to mechanisms behind this, or was it more just
no.
reporting what it saw?
Yeah, just reporting what it saw, which was because you can speculate, but there would talk about like high heel shoes are a risk factor for knee OA. They're probably a risk factor for hallux valgus, for bunions. There's a whole lot of obesity is a risk factor for knee OA. It's increases the risk of foot problems as well. So they're probably just risk factors in common is probably the most likely explanation.
If nothing else taught, every day being a school day taught me a new term of, Mendelian randomization, which I clearly need to do a bit more reading on. So, yes, right. Let's wrap up. Craig, thank you so much for carrying today's episode. I've been absolute dead weight. I apologize to you and to all our listeners. But as soon as we've logged off, I'm going to go to bed and I'll bounce back stronger next week. We encourage everyone, as always, to message us, email us, get involved at podchatlive.com. Our social media handles are Podchat Live. Tag us in your photos with us, share PodSnap Lives with us. One thing I should say, which we recently realized, is that on Spotify, there's stats that we rarely look at, but we recently looked at them and we found out that we have over 1,300 followers, I guess, which are people that subscribe to the podcast so that every week it's in their feed, or follow, subscribe, etc. We'd love more people to do that, of course, but it made us even more intrigued that we've only got 66 ratings. What, over 1,300 people follow us and only 66 ratings? And I know I say I'm gonna keep begging for ratings and until we get to 100, but we would love it if people could just click on the rating or leave a review if you're on a podcast vehicle that allows you to do that, or just share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And we will be back next week with more of the same. Thanks again, Craig, and I'll see you next week.
Okay, sleep well.
Thanks, mate.